The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
Coming to you live, it may be Black Friday everywhere else in Vegas. We're going to make it green. It's Vegas Sports Day. I'm Dave Malinsky. Taking over the Teddy Covers role for today, I'm the one manning the door. Sitting in for Teddy on the side, got Scott Spreitzer, member of the Covers expert staff, longtime Las Vegas handicapper, and all-around good guy who today actually brought donuts. Of course, on the one day of the year, we don't need them. Coming up today, how in certain times we have to be fickle when discussing the last game for a college football coach. We're going to tell you why sometimes it's actually good when a team has no class. And when we get to money time today, we're going to let Scott deliver because he brought the donuts. The guy delivers. Scott, great having you back here again. Good job for us on Wednesday. Your first take off of a busy Thursday on the sports board.
First of all, it's good to be back. And I got to tell you, man, just 12 trans fat, sugarlicious fat pills to get us back in the groove after yesterday's tryptophanic bliss. You say, what? And I say, hi, I'm Scott Spreitzer. I brought the donuts, but Dave already gave that away. But anyway, yeah, I'm watching the games, Dave, yesterday, and everybody's watching football, not paying attention. But one of the things at this point of the season I want to do is start to look towards college basketball, obviously, and pay as much attention to some of the smaller mid-majors as possible because we can still find good value in a lot of those teams. And I'm watching last night Fairfield take on hosting and blowing out, by the way, the Arizona State Sun Devils. Not hosting. It was a stag party in Orlando. It was an invitational. But the night before, when we're handicapping all the basketball games, we see where Arizona State and Herb Sendek are at it again. They're 1-2 going into the game straight up. They're turning the ball over left and right. And then they go up against a Fairfield team that, get this, guys, in the first four games had already forced 66 turnovers, allowing 36 assists. That's already a 9-17 average assist to turnover for Fairfield's four opponents. What did they do last night? They completely dismantled Arizona State. How about a 6-18 turnover assist to turnover ratio for Arizona State? Fairfield not only covers for those of us who laid the three, but they covered for those who were undisciplined, who laid the six at the closing line, and the Stags win by 11 points. What did you see yesterday?
You know, we come actually at this with a little bit of nostalgia and maybe a little bit of bittersweet aspects to it. Usually we love this weekend on the college football calendar. Here come the big rivalries, the traditions, the things we grew up with. If you watch the end of Texas A&M last night, you see the drama and the passion, but now we see what changes going forward. We don't know when we're going to see Texas and Texas A&M play again. Today, Pittsburgh and West Virginia, the backyard brawl, just a little over an hour down I-79 from each other. I grew up right in between those two schools. When will we see that one take place again? Missouri, Kansas, they call it the border war. We don't know when we're going to see that again. Now, again, it doesn't have a lot of luster this year, but because of all these conference changes, when the schools were proactive in trying to cut their deals first, instead of the NCAA coming in and saying, wait a minute, let's just reorganize. Let's set this up the right way because we don't want to ruin so much of what we already have here. So many of these games we've looked forward to almost all of our lifetimes, back before we were betting, the color, the pageantry. Now that starts to go away in exchange for a couple of dollars. And I think the unfortunate thing is they're going to realize going forward, they're not going to end up making that much more money anyway. We are going to see some mistakes going forward with that aspect. But you want to make money. So enough of the nostalgia. Let's get to Market Watch, and let's look at things we can directly get into this weekend. Now, already this week, we've talked about teams fighting to get into the position for the conference championship games. On Wednesday, we talked about teams that need to win to be bowl eligible. Let's go to another element that's directly in play this weekend. Coaches on the hot seat. We've got a list of guys who probably have to win. Some guys on this list are probably already out, even if they do win this week. Let's give you the guys who absolutely are on the hot seat going into their final game. One that's already kicked off today, and it's a little bit of an awkward one. Akron is most likely going to fire Rob Anello. Ordinarily, we thought that announcement would have come by now, but his mother passed away on Tuesday. So the university has to be a little bit delicate with the way that they handle that, but Anello does not figure to come back to Akron next year. Short tenure, just didn't play out very well. This afternoon, Frank Spaziani at Boston College, absolutely on the hot seat. Dennis Erickson at Arizona State, hot seat, or possibly someone who might be ready to leave voluntarily.
A couple of the guys that I'm looking at, Dave, that are on the hot seat firmly would be the Kansas Jayhawks head coach Turner Gill. And this is kind of a tough one for me because Turner Gill happens to be my all-time favorite college football quarterback. But Turner Gill comes into a Kansas situation last year, and I thought you got to give him a year because Mark Mangino left the cupboard bare. But Mark Mangino normally leaves the cupboard bare. Have you seen him lately? We've also got Illinois' Ron Zook, who's on the hot seat. Again, great job of recruiting. Gets Illinois football back on the map. But as soon as the spotlight is on Champaign-Urbana, the team folds. That's Ron Zook. You've got Memphis, Larry Porter. Thanks for playing. UCLA's Rick Neuheisel. Can't find a quarterback to stay healthy. And it's amazing that he's not been able to find a quarterback to produce since he played in Pasadena at the quarterback position. And another head coach at Middle Tennessee State, Rick Stockstill. Thanks for playing.
So a couple more guys on the list who are interim coaches who are most likely in their final regular season game with their teams. Luke Fickell at Ohio State, though he still will likely be the head man for their bowl game. Everett Withers, North Carolina, also a chance that they're going to go on to be bowling. Tulane, Mark Hudson, although already we're hearing Hudson is likely to become the head coach at Eastern Illinois. And the funny thing is, if given the choice between Eastern Illinois and Tulane, he might actually choose the lower tier program where you've got a better chance to win. And Arizona, later tomorrow, Tim Kish will be making his bow out as an interim coach. So now, Scott, what do we do with it? We know one of the issues we talk about a lot, when you're an interim coach, the players know they don't have to listen to you because you're not going to be back next year. But when you're talking about a guy who recruited the players, if it's Dennis Erickson, and you've been playing for him for 4 years or maybe five, is it that one last win one for the coach? Or if the players see the writing on the wall, is the energy already out of the balloon?
Dennis Erickson, when he came to Arizona State, he's a good example because he was at Idaho for a second time, and he was really starting to put together some wins with the Idaho Vandals, and the players really liked Erickson. They liked playing for him in the direction they were going into, and he told his players after the final game that he was there in the locker room that he was going to be leaving the program to take the job at Arizona State. The players were not happy about it, and he said, I want one more shot at winning a BCS championship, and he's really failed, especially the last couple of years after looking like he was going to build something in Tempe. But this year, on top of everything that's happened, you're talking about an Arizona State football team that has really disappointed as far as I'm concerned. So I don't know if you can look at Erickson and say the players are going to come out and give it that one last college try, so to speak. A guy like Gill, Turner Gill at Kansas, I don't care if they try or not. It's a horrible team. They stink on ice. And whether they try for Turner Gill or not, it's not going to make a big difference. He is a pretty popular coach. So you do have to break it down and see what players want to play for certain guys. You mentioned Tim Kish, Dave, at the University of Arizona, the interim head coach there. They already know who their coach is going to be next year. I'm sure some players are excited. Some players are going, here we go again. We just traded one screamer in Stoops for another screamer coming in, a Rich Rodriguez. And Tim Kish is a pretty popular coach and the way he runs practices. You saw what they did at UCLA. The first game they fired Stoops and Kish took over. They might give it one more college try for Tim Kish.
Yeah, if Rich Rodriguez were smart, you might want to say, you know what, Tim, stick around and be my defensive coordinator. Stay with the program. Helps to bring a little bit of continuity there in that when you come into a new conference, you'd like to have a defensive coordinator that already knows all the other programs, helps you with your game planning for next year. I feel sorry for a guy like Turner Gill. That this is going to look worse on his resume than it should. He wasn't ready for the Kansas job. Buffalo had one season where the ball bounced extraordinarily well for them. If you look at where Buffalo was before Gill got there and where Buffalo is now, he really didn't do anything at Buffalo. They just had one year where they got a lot of bounces. He still needs some time. He has a chance to become a good coach. This might be a black mark that'll be very difficult for him to get out from underneath. This show is all about you. Your emails are a driving force behind us. You help us to set the tone for what we do every day, so keep those coming. That's sportsday@covers.com. Follow us on Twitter. It's @VegasSportsDay. Go to the posting forums, covers.com, click on forums. Active discussions going on while we're on the air. Ask us a question. We'll answer it live for you. When we come back, we're going to answer one of those emails and take a trip inside the numbers.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
We're back. You're watching the Black Friday edition of Vegas Sports Day. We're going to go inside the numbers in a minute, but first let's go to the mailbag. One thing to clear up quickly, Lynn, we did get your note about the contest element. You're going to see an announcement pretty soon. We have that in the works, but you can go to covers.com and check their contest page right now. There are some things going on you could plug into immediately. Let's go to this letter from Vince. He says, hey guys, really enjoying the information so far. I know you've broken down some key stat elements in football, but I'm wondering how you handle late game situations in college basketball. I see so many silly swings happen in the final minute, like teams fouling when they shouldn't and forcing up wild shots while playing from behind. Do you have a way of breaking those down when you keep your charts?
We've definitely, Vince, seen a lot of that over the past week or so in the early portion of the college basketball season. Games coming right down to the wire as far as the spread is concerned. Even games that are 10 to 12 point as far as the straight up outcome is concerned, but the spread is right there in the 11 to 12 range we've seen come right down to the wire. And it's been layups uncontested. It's been fouls at the end of games that have won the spread or lost the spread for you. I don't have the same approach to this as probably Dave is going to have, but what I do is I tend to look at what coaches tend to win games outright or cover short spreads when they are underdogs towards the end of games on which ones tend to lose. Now, it doesn't break down 70, 30, 60, 40. It might be a 54-46 or 53-47 scenario. But what I'll tend to do is it gets me off of potential losers more than it puts me on winners, which obviously keeps some money in your wallet. And so what I'm looking to do is find that coach who's going to lose or make the wrong call or the crazy timeout towards the end of a game when there's a 10-point outright spread, when the Vegas spread is actually in that range and they have no chance to overcome it. And that's kind of what I break it down to. Also, I look at free throw percentages. I want to see what team is able to make their free throws, because if they are up 6 or 7 points and the spread, let's say, is anywhere from that 4 to 7 point range, they may get fouled, especially early in the season, more often than they will in the conference season. I want to see if they're making their free throws on the season. If they are not, if they're a team that's hitting 60-65%, I'll try to stay away from those clubs also, especially early on in the college basketball season. I think it changes a little bit once you get into conference play.
Yeah, over the course of the winter, you're going to see us focusing a lot on these 75% free throw teams as small favorites, that nice little advantage you have at the end. The problem that the letter brought up was with databases, and it's very difficult. One time we thought, you know, let's try this. Let's freeze the games after 38 minutes when we know teams are playing pretty much straight. They haven't got into that late game scramble, and let's work with that. The problem is we could not find a good database to work from. First, you've got to go back and be able to take all of the play-by-play information. Now, there are various websites that on their scoreboards, they run play-by-play. So you think you can go and capture it. Here's the problem. A lot of these are wrong. These are done a lot of times by college stringers. They'll put them up during the game. They very rarely go back and re-edit. We had a classic situation going back about 7 years. We had made a bet on a prop in a St. Joe's Xavier game, first team to 30 points. The team that the sportsbook was grading based upon one of those four-letter networks, starts with an E, you might have heard of it, you could probably guess what. And, you know, of course, we're watching the game, and we see that we've won the bet. They graded it a loser. And they said, well, here's the play-by-play from this four-letter source that starts with an E. We went back through it, and not only did they have the score wrong at that 30-point mark, but a lot of the play-by-play was dead wrong. It's like someone had just made it up. So they saw maybe they got the score from somewhere. Oh, Xavier's up 8-2. Okay, this guy made a shot, this guy did this. It was nonsensical. So then we started to follow a lot of them. And a lot of these don't. Now, on NFL on Sundays, it's a lot better. You go to NFL.com, go to CBS Sportsline. Those play-by-plays are going to be pretty accurate. But in college basketball, we have not found a database that we can use that would give us that first 38 minutes of accuracy. So for now, we do chart these games off to the side. And again, one of the things that Scott noted, in the early part of the season, it's more extreme. Because you will foul down 8 in the final minute right now. You might foul down 10 because you want your players to practice that sequence. You're not going to do that come conference play. It's not as big of an issue. But I know exactly where the letter writer is coming from. You've got a lot of meaningless scores in your database that don't carry what they should. Let's go inside the numbers now, and we'll talk about how we can put some of this to work for you. We've talked about the Raiders a few times on this show about the lack of sophistication in what they're doing on offense and defense. They've had several coaching hires in a row. We don't want to say meat and potatoes, but guys who are going to play a pretty safe system. They wanted to be able to run the ball well, play well at the line of scrimmage, not be terribly complex on defense. And so when that happens, we have this ability to break the Raiders down a little bit differently. We talked a few times on the show about non-division and division settings. In this case, we want to break down how the Raiders do outside the division because this is where the sophistication comes into play. And you want to think about it this way. When you're in the division, you're up against teams that you know and they know you, so the game planning is a little bit easier. But what happens when it's the first time around? You haven't played them yet. They haven't played you yet. So thanks to our friends at NFLteamtrends.com. They're going to be helping us out here on Fridays to do some of this research. We're able to go back and take a look at how the Raiders have done in this role. Go back the last 6 years, and when we go inside the numbers, you're going to see when the Raiders get outside the division, when they're doing a fresh game plan, and someone gets to do a fresh game plan for them, look at how that lack of sophistication comes into play. Only 16 and 40 straight up, 22 and 33 against the spread. That's a 40% spread record at a big sample. When favored, 4 and 6 straight up, 2 and 8 against the spread. Note that that's coming into play this Sunday. You've got the Raiders as a favorite against Chicago. They have not done well in this role. When we come back, the Insider Six-Pack and the news you need to know before you head to the windows.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there. Okay.
Welcome back to Vegas Sports Day. Now, ordinarily, Teddy's going to do that little pop-the-top thing for Insider Six-Pack, but we realize if you're like us, the only thing you want with carbonation this morning is probably Alka-Seltzer. So how about a nice, smooth Insider Six-Pack, a little bit easy on your tummy today. Let's start with the weather for Saturday. Jacob, let's take a look at this chart. We've got several games that could be impacted. Once again, if it's late November in the Midwest, you want to be thinking wind. We've got several games that are where it could come into play. We start with Missouri-Kansas being played in Kansas City, and then throughout the Big Ten, Ohio State-Michigan, Michigan State-Northwestern, Purdue-Indiana, Illinois-Minnesota, and Penn State-Wisconsin are all going to have wind. Rain throughout the Big Ten, not Missouri-Kansas City, but in the Big Ten, you're going to have a chance of rain. When you get up to Minnesota tomorrow, that could be snow flurries. Looks great in the south tomorrow. You will see a chance of rain in Seattle, but it's going to be warm. That will not impact these teams. Remember, they're playing on the Seattle Seahawks field. That's field turf. Rain will not impact that at all.
There are some interesting subjects that could impact another game, and that would be the battle between Colorado State and Air Force out of the Mountain West. And when I'm looking at this game, you know, the books were kind of slow this week to posting the number, and they have now posted the number, and that would be about 11.5, Colorado State the favorite. But they were slow to post it because of Colorado State's quarterback, Pete Thomas, who basically defined himself as being not likely to play this week. But we're kind of throwing it around as we're handicapping this game and trying to figure out if Pete Thomas is that big of a difference as far as the talent gap from his backup, Garrett Grayson, who would take over. Now, Grayson had a real nice game against TCU. He completed 14 out of 24. He was efficient, about 250 yards, threw for a touchdown, ran for 53 on 8 carries. And you know what? We're finally starting to see this line hitting the board, as we said, at 11.5. And if you take a note of a subtle tactical advantage that the Rams may have in this week's contest against Air Force, it comes from Steve Fairchild, the coach of Colorado State, because this team, by the way, this school was out of session all week and didn't have to worry about going to class. And Steve Fairchild said this, and I quote, "This is a good week to have Air Force when you don't have school." He said, "It reminds me of an NFL practice because you basically have all morning to talk about what you were doing, and then you come out and do it. Now, before they go home, we'll correct it in meetings. I like the schedule. I can see why, Steve.
Heading to the NFL on Sunday, Kevin Cobb, now back atop the Arizona depth chart. A couple of good practices in a row. He's healthy again. What they thought might have turned into a quarterback battle dissolved pretty quickly on Sunday. 2 weeks ago, we wondered if John Skelton had possibly played his way ahead of Cobb with those two late touchdowns to beat Philadelphia. Then on Sunday, Skelton turned in arguably the worst performance by a quarterback all year. 6 out of 19, 3 interceptions. Cobb's healthy. The rest of the season will be his full-scale chance to take over the offense heading into next year. One little note on the other side, though. Mark Clayton, who fought back over a calendar year from a knee injury to finally get on the field for the Rams, only played 2 games. He's gone now. Surgery on both knees coming up. After surgery on both knees, we're not sure we're going to see Mark Clayton back in the NFL again.
Minnesota's taking on the Atlanta Falcons this week in Atlanta, and there's good news and bad news for the visiting Vikings here. First of all, the good news, possibly, is that Adrian Peterson doesn't have structural damage. He's got the ankle sprain, but he's been upgraded to questionable this week. The bad news, though, is that they've got a ton of starters who are banged up for this football game, including quarterback Christian Ponder. He's been limited in practice this week due to a knee injury. Other key cogs who have missed practice this week for the Vikings: wide receiver Percy Harvin, right guard Anthony Herrera, linebacker Aaron Henderson. How about free safety Hussein Abdullah and their tight ends Vasanti Shinko and Kyle Rudolph? The Vikings had 3 first-time starters on defense last week, plus nickelback Benny Sapp, who hadn't played since early in the season for another team.
Bad news for the Buffalo Bills. Maybe the last thing they needed after being outscored 106-26 over the last 3 games. Fred Jackson lost for the season. Jackson was having a Pro Bowl year. 934 rushing yards, 5.5 yards per carry. Also 39 receptions at 11.3 per catch. That 11.3 is real high for a running back over that big of a sample. 39.7% of all Buffalo yards from Fred Jackson this year. Problem is, they don't really have a replacement. You're going to see C.J. Spiller try to be the full-time back. He's a good third down guy, maybe an occasional guy to use, but he's not an every down back. What we're likely to find out is that Ryan Fitzpatrick is even less average than we thought. Less average? That was really bad. We got to get Teddy back here on Monday. We might find out that Fitzpatrick was relying so much upon Jackson, and that when he has to carry more of the load himself, he's just nothing special.
Dave's trying to tell me he doesn't like being the host. You know, the Eagles are having to deal with a lot of issues on both sides of the ball this week against the New England Patriots. Dream team quarterback Michael Vick is doubtful this morning, and we cannot rule him out yet, though. But maybe if they would have had Tim Tebow, they would have been a dream team. It's just a joke. But anyway, Vince Young would have benefited this week if he could have practiced with the first teamers as he gets ready to possibly start again for the Eagles if Vic can't go. Problem is, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, both have not practiced so far this week. Jackson has been in a walking boot the last couple of days, but he does have a chance to go while Maclin looks like he's going to be out with shoulder and hamstring issues. And of course, you've got Nnamdi Asamoah, who had to be taken off on a cart after suffering a knee injury on Thursday. First reports, though, no structural damage. What was once a deep quarterback, cornerback rotation for the Eagles, I should say, is no longer. I mean, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, he was missing in last week's win over the Giants with an ankle injury, and he's still not up to full speed.
When we come back, yeah, we know it's getting close to kickoff time in Baton Rouge, but it's going to be money time. We're going to give you some winners for tomorrow. You can get the LSU score later. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, we're not going to raise the roof. We're not going to yell. We're not going to make dogs whistle anywhere. But it is money time. And this edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. For anything you need to know related to gaming anywhere, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Michigan, a 7.5-point favorite over Ohio State, a game that doesn't quite bring the drama that it used to. And it, you know, when I think about this, I see that Michigan is playing Ohio State tomorrow. But Scott, is Ohio State playing Michigan? Do you have that same feeling from the other side?
I do a little bit. You know, first of all, we should say Michigan for our boy Teddy, who went to Michigan in Ann Arbor. Sorry, Dave, I knew you wanted to stay away from all the M's, but I had to throw it in there. But here's what I like about what's going on. I'm a Brady Hoke fan going back to before he even went to San Diego State, and we felt that he was going to turn this program around. But I'm going to tell you right now, we talked about this with Tim DeReuter the other day with Texas A&M, and we're going to talk about it again here. If some of these head coaches wouldn't be loyal to their defensive coordinators who may be their friends, they might still have their jobs. Rich Rodriguez, maybe not, but the bottom line was he had a terrible defensive coordinator in Greg Robinson who had his team playing all over the field out of position the last couple of years, and it cost both Rodriguez and Robinson their jobs, obviously. Rodriguez now taking over in Arizona. Can't say that about Brady Hoke. He brings in what is now the highest paid assistant coach in the Big Ten with Madison taking over as defensive coordinator. He's making $750,000 a year. There are head coaches out there making less than that. But what Madison has done, and it was on display at its best in Ann Arbor last week against Nebraska, is pre-snap parallel movement along the line of scrimmage to confuse quarterbacks. Braxton Miller can be good when he's healthy and when he can scramble out of trouble and gain some extra yardage when the passing lanes aren't there. But I think he's going to be confused by this defense this week. And it's all about Greg Madison doing another bang-up job week after week, getting better and better as his players get used to his play calling.
We like Madison so much that you'll remember we had a postmortem last week and put Michigan out as the play of the day last Saturday. And look at that dominance against Nebraska. 25-11 first downs, 80-53 in offensive snaps. You don't dominate Nebraska that way. Could we see more of the same tomorrow? There is an opportunity there. Ohio State has only completed 50% of their passes one time over the last nine games. And you know how they got over 50% in that one? Remember that memorable pass from Braxton Miller at the end of the Wisconsin game? Didn't have to happen. Otherwise, it could have been nine straight of less than 50% completions, because you're going to have to throw the ball here. You're not going to run well enough on Michigan. The only thing Michigan has not done is they haven't maximized on the offensive side. They did not get the most out of Denard Robinson. But maybe we can see a little bit more from him here. Usually, we're accustomed to an Ohio State defense at the line of scrimmage being dominating in November. Go look at the Indiana game 3 weeks ago. Look at Purdue 2 weeks ago. Look at Penn State last week with their limited offense. This Ohio State defense has not played with that type of passion, which begs the question, is this, Scott, one of these cases where not only a lame duck coach, but now you kind of know who next year's coach is going to be? Have the players maybe tuned the staff out this year?
This is one of those cases where I think that's right. I think they probably have tuned out Fickell. And the bottom line is that they know Urban Meyer's coming. And the guys that are underclassmen, or at least they think Urban Meyer's coming like the rest of us, the guys that are underclassmen have got to be pretty excited about that situation. But Fickell, he doesn't have the team, I think, listening to him as they should throughout an entire four quarters and in preparation. They know he's gone. They know he's a lame duck. So I think they probably have tuned him out a little bit. Now, here's a couple of the quick notes that might make it tougher to defend Denard Robinson. You've got Andrew Sweet, the linebacker for Ohio State, who's banged up for this particular football game, and he's had a tremendous season when he hasn't been injured for the Buckeyes. He could be a key cog that's missing. But you know why they haven't gotten, to me at least, my opinion, why they haven't gotten the most out of Robinson this year? Because he hasn't improved passing the football. I mean, if you remember Jeff Blake with the Cincinnati Bengals several years ago, there was a point of a season with the Cincinnati Bengals when he had his big year where it looked to me like a couple of the receivers for Cincinnati could have put up their arms and yelled for a fair catch with some of those deep passes, because they hung and they fluttered forever, but he had outstanding receivers making grabs. Michigan's got some nice receivers. Some of Denard Robinson's passes look like wounded ducks, and a lot of times it looks like these guys could call for fair catches like they're fielding a punt.
Let's go to Charlottesville, Virginia, where Virginia Tech, a 4-point favorite over Virginia. And again, brings a little bit of a fascination to it when you talk about adjustments in the point spread. We saw Virginia taking 17 at Florida State last week. If you're taking Florida State, taking 17 at Florida State, how do you get to only be taking 4? It shows you how the markets react sometimes a little bit too late in particular settings. They give Virginia maybe a little bit too much credit for that win. Also shows you how much Florida State is overrated. But here's what's interesting about this one, and we talked about this on the show before. Hokie Nation. Since coming into the ACC, Virginia Tech 18-5 as a conference road favorite. There's a big reason for that. All throughout that conference, you have teams who don't sell out home games very often. Plenty of tickets available for the visiting teams. Virginia Tech fans grab a lot of those seats. We find this out coming this week in Virginia. That game is already sold out, not because of Cavalier fans, but because of Virginia Tech fans buying them up. Virginia Tech has been a road favorite the last three trips to Charlottesville. They won the games by 79 points, covered the spread by 53.5. This line looks a little bit low to us.
Well, I'll tell you what, I thought you were going to say the Hokies were going to gobble them up when it came to the tickets. But the bottom line is when you look at these two teams and the way they're going right now, I said way back early in the season that I felt Virginia Tech was a potential player in the BCS championship run. But I also said that they didn't have any real superstars to turn to. I was a little bit wrong about that because David Wilson behind this offensive line has been a little better than I thought he was going to. He's rushed for over 1,400 yards. He's one of the top three running backs at FBS right now as far as yardage is concerned, and he's running for better than 6 yards per pop. Now, what is also nice about this Hokie team is that Bud Foster's unit came into this season with a chip on their shoulder after not playing Bud Foster defense a year ago. They played much better this season, and Virginia could be in a little trouble here. That running game, which averages about 188 on the ground, was held to about 90 yards last week against Florida State in the win 14-13. I think they're going to have a rough time moving the ball here, and I lean towards Virginia Tech to do it again as a conference road favorite.
Let's go to the Coliseum in Los Angeles and say, okay, here's your scenario, Rick Neuheisel. You're going to play Southern Cal in the Coliseum, and if you win, you go to the Pac-12 championship game. Everything's right where you want it to be, right? Well, then you come to Vegas, and you look and see that you're a 16.5-point underdog. So it's not where you want it to be, and the only reason you're eligible for the championship game is that Southern Cal is not. Perhaps the last go-round for Neuheisel at UCLA, if he wins this game and just gets to the Pac-12 title game, maybe a chance to keep his job. But he's got a difficult matchup here. When we look back at the last month of play, Scott, how many teams would you say are better than Southern Cal over the past month?
There's been very few. Maybe zero. I'm going to tell you what. And Matt Barkley is one of the reasons, guys. And Matt Barkley, and we were talking about this a few weeks ago on a show we do down in Los Angeles, about how this kid is really not talked about, or at least wasn't at that point of the season, east of Utah. But he's going to be a top pick in the NFL draft. He can deliver the ball all over the field. Sometimes gets a little bit shaky when he goes those out deep routes. But overall, the play calling that's come from the Kiffin staff has been to play to his strengths, and he's done a great job over the past few weeks. This team is that close to being undefeated right now. They had that game against Arizona State in which they lost 43-22, and it really didn't represent the type of game, the final score didn't, because USC did outgain Arizona State, but they had a horrible turnover margin. I think it was -5, if memory recalls correctly, against the Sun Devils, and then, of course, came just a couple of plays away from beating Stanford, a loss in overtime. Here's what makes UCLA more dangerous now, though, than they were just a few short weeks ago when they got clobbered in a Thursday night game against the Arizona Wildcats. I give Rick Neuheisel, the Golden Boy, credit for he and his staff making a change to this UCLA defense. What they did is they decided after the Arizona game, we have got to get quicker. And what they did is they took a linebacker and moved him to defensive end. They took that defensive end, they moved him to defensive tackle. This made the UCLA Bruin defense much quicker on the stop unit side of the football. And you saw right out of the gate, the first time they did it, they caught Cal by surprise and they knocked off the California Golden Bears 31-14. All but one game they played pretty well. That Utah game, another misleading final score. They lose 31-6. They outgain the Utes, and that new-look defense held Utah to 291 yards.
Of course, one of the things that they're doing to help that defense also is they established the way they want to play on the other side of the ball. Last four games, 187 running plays, only 79 passes, running and defense. And think about this if you're looking at an underdog in this price range. If you want to slow the tempo, run the ball a little bit, play a little bit of defense, that 16.5, you know, you can shrink that down a little bit. Or maybe even look at the total here, because here's what's interesting. If you look at last week's Southern Cal game against Oregon, you see, 35 points, 474 yards. Pretty bad, huh? That's pretty good. If you go to Eugene, Oregon, and you face 82 snaps, and you hold Oregon to less than 6 yards per play on that field, that's actually very good defense. We might find out that maybe that 58.5 out there on the total might be a little better value than looking at the point spread itself. Okay, if we save the best for last, let's go ahead and get the play of the day charts up because we're going to kick this Auburn-Alabama around a little bit, but we think we've saved the best for last for you. Alabama, a 20.5-point favorite on the Plains in Auburn. Earlier this week, we talked in a postmortem section about how bitter that loss was last year. Alabama on the verge of going up 28-0. Mark Ingram running down the sideline, seemingly all alone. The ball's knocked away from behind, and instead of 28-0, the game turns in a major way. Alabama's been waiting for 12 months to get their revenge. Scott, do you think they bring the right energy?
Oh, I think the energy is going to be there and then some this week to go after the hated rival Auburn Tigers in the Iron Bowl this year. And you mentioned it last year. It looked like Alabama was going to cruise to a victory over Auburn and knock Cam Newton's chances for a national title right off the blocks. But once you got to give him credit. Once they got that opportunity to get back in the game, Newton and the Auburn offense did so, and they go on to win the game. And I love, if you've watched this thing on I believe it's HBO lately, about the Auburn-Alabama battle and grown men crying during the game for the Alabama Crimson Tide in that loss last season, and guys poisoning trees on campus, absolutely outrageous. I grew up in the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry. I thought we were all nuts. These guys take the cake and then some. But as far as this game is concerned, man, you're not talking about the same teams whatsoever. The Auburn Tigers, guys, are 93rd in the nation on the offensive side of the football. They're one-dimensional. They do one thing well. And if you can't run the football, which Auburn's not great at doing all the time, if you can't run the football against Alabama, you're not going to do it at all, whether you can pass the football or run it against this defense, if all they have to focus on is one dimension of an opposing attack. And here's the thing. Alabama's number one in just about every important defensive category, including the fact that they allow just 8.4 points per game. At the same time, on the flip side, you got the Auburn Tiger defense, which is a sieve at times, giving up over 28 points per game. My one final thought on this particular contest, I remember watching Gene Chizik when he played out here in Las Vegas or coached out here against the UNLV Rebels for that short hiccup that he was in Ames, Iowa, coaching the Iowa State Cyclones. I saw the most undisciplined football team that I've ever seen. My tickets were about 5 rows behind the Iowa State bench. Not only his players were undisciplined and committing ridiculous 15-yard penalties, but his staff was undisciplined, jawing and arguing with the crowd, and Chizik was the lead role of the whole. It shocked me from start to finish. So when he got the job for Auburn, I thought, man, he's coming into a real nice situation. But the bottom line is, I don't know if he can sustain it without a guy like Cam Newton leading the way on the field.
So why does it make the top of our list for the Saturday board? Jacob, let's get that elephant up there in the background, which we kind of like that better than some of the other Alabama logos. These last three step-up games for Auburn against the elite teams of the SEC, Georgia, Arkansas, LSU, they lose 128-31. 97 points, 32.3 per game, the last two of those. Couldn't get to 100 yards rushing against Arkansas or Georgia, either one. Those aren't dominating defenses like what they're going to see today. So the Vegas Sports Day, play of the day, NCAA edition. Let's go with Alabama. Lay the 20.5 and look for Roll Tide to be the flow. When we come back, we're going to switch to the NFL. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann.
Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it?
Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, it's time for Money Time NFL edition. And we're going to start in what might look like an obscure matchup, but you know if it's obscure, that means there's a little bit of meat to it. We're going to start in Cincinnati, where the Bengals are a 7-point favorite, 37.5 over Cleveland. Fascinating to break this one down because back on week one, we're taking Cincinnati +6 at Cleveland. We're thinking, wait a minute, how could Cleveland be 6? Look at these rosters. They're pretty even. Well, now look at how much that has swung in only 10 weeks. Very, very rare in NFL division play you see a double-figure shift in lines in the same season unless there are overwhelming injuries in play, which isn't the case in this one. In fact, Montario Hardesty coming back for Cleveland. Bengals have some injuries on defense. We have to wonder a little bit, now that the Bengals have lost a couple of games in a row, that little swagger, that little confidence level may not be there. This may not be the type of team that should be out there laying 7.
just not quite so sure that the Cleveland Browns are the type of offense to take advantage. If you look at what they did early in the season, when this offense was clicking, they were only averaging 18 points per game. Their last five games, they've averaged just over 10 points per game. And guys, their last five, as I mentioned, the bad offense, 12 points or less in four of those last five games have the Cleveland Browns scored. So I'm not quite sure, even with Cincinnati's injuries, that the Cleveland Browns have the type of offense that can all of a sudden find their mojo, because they haven't found it all season long with Colt McCoy at quarterback. Here's a couple of spread notes that I found, and it must be noted that the Browns, you know, they're on a major point spread slide right now. They're going on a money-burning 3-14-1 against the spread mark over the last 18 games. And conversely, the Bengals come back 10-2-1 in their last 13 overall. I don't really talk about spreads a whole lot and angles or team trends. I kind of like NFL league-wide trends if I'm going to jump in on something like this. But the bottom line is, you got to be very careful with your money when you want to dart in and play the Cleveland Browns, because they generally don't cover point spreads three times in the last 18 games.
Of course, that's why we get seven. And of course, when we talk about spreads being the great equalizer, we talk about how bad Cleveland's been, how good Cincinnati has been, the odds makers have to stop that. So you keep elevating Cleveland, you know, till you get it high enough to where they can cover a number. You try to make Cincinnati out to that particular point where you can stop that roll from taking place. But when we talk about bad offenses, here's what's intriguing about these Cincinnati defensive injuries and how much they missed Leon Hall. You go back and look at the last four games, you've had 16 pass completions of more than 20 yards against them. Say, okay, that's a lot. Maybe it was a schedule. Now, two of those four, Seattle and Tennessee, two teams that are also struggling very badly on offense. I think so much of the Cleveland offensive problems is they had a sequence of three games where they simply did not have an NFL running back. And we talked about that in one of our postmortems a couple of weeks ago. We had Hardesty and Hillis both out on top of Jackson being injured earlier this year. They just didn't have anywhere else to turn. Hardesty's not a great back, but at least he's an NFL caliber back. And Ogbonnaya actually played pretty well against Jacksonville last week. So we're not so much playing on Cleveland here, playing against what's actually just an average Cincinnati team with some holes in the secondary that might have a difficult time covering a big spread. Let's go to Sunday night in Kansas City, where the Steelers are 10.5 and a 40-point favorite. And you're going to see something you probably never thought you would see. Tyler Palko back-to-back in primetime. He would not have made it on American Idol, would not have made it on Dancing with the Stars with the performance he had against New England. Three interceptions, a passer rating of 56.1. Now, we talked about those Palko issues going into the Monday night game. He's been waived by four different NFL teams. He's been waived by the California Redwoods of the USFL. He's been waived by the Montreal Alouettes of the Canadian League. Why is he still going to be starting Sunday night? It had to do with travel. Kyle Orton could not get to Kansas City. Well, let's say travel at Thanksgiving. Kyle Orton could not get to Kansas City in time to pass his physical, which you have to do to complete a signing to practice. Kansas City practiced a little bit earlier on Thanksgiving Day. Orton couldn't get there in time. He's only going to get a light workout today. He will not be ready to start, probably not ready to play on Sunday night. So here's Tyler Palko now against one of the best defenses in the NFL.
I guess you could wrap this up in two words or two statements, Dave. You've got Dick LeBeau against Tyler Palko. You've got a great defensive mind against a quarterback who, what, threw 13 passes coming into the season, coming into last week's game. It's pretty bad. It could get pretty ugly. Here's some news on Ben Roethlisberger, by the way. He spent much of his time in practice this week working out shotgun and pistol formations. Doesn't believe taking direct snaps from Maurice Pouncey is going to be an issue. Here's what he said. Quote, it's definitely different. And what he went on to say is it hurts, first off, just to grip the ball. It's something you have to get used to. So what Pittsburgh has to do is work on the ground game, obviously. Go to Heath Miller like they did against the New England Patriots at times, because Kansas City is susceptible to that over the middle, and they don't normally react well and diagram game plans as the games move on over the middle. They don't make up for those problems early on. If Big Ben can grip the ball well enough to get it to his tight end, then it should be no problem at all and a cruise to a victory for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But as much as I would love to say, well, we're going to come in and we're going to grab all these points with an underdog here in the NFL, I can't get over the fact that it's a Dick LeBeau defense against Tyler Palko.
And it's a Dick LeBeau defense with extra time to prepare. Like, you need added time for the limited weapons that Kansas City has. Let's go to Jacksonville. Houston now up to 4.5, 37.5 over the Jaguars. Matt Leinart back in the game again. We're probably not going to see Matt Schaub again this year. Matt Leinart's a guy that we actually liked as a manage-the-game type of quarterback. And what Arizona wanted him to do is be this feature type of guy. Let's build an offense around you. No, he's actually a savvy football player. He can manage a game. And that's what you do with Houston. You look at that running game that you've got with Foster and with Tate. You've got a healthy Andre Johnson coming back at wide receiver. And of all things, the schedule draw, where you get 2 weeks to prepare for your debut, is there going to be that much of a drop-off from Schaub to Leinart?
I don't think there will be. I think Leinart, who's had time now to prepare for this defense that he's going to face this week, is going to be just fine. And as you mentioned, and you hit it on the head, the Arizona Cardinals ask too much out of Matt Leinart. You put Leinart in a role kind of like Alex Smith has had this season with the San Francisco 49ers, and I think he can have a much better run as long as he needs to be on this football field for this team. Here's the situation also. You've got a team that should be able to run the ball against Jacksonville. And as far as Jacksonville's offense is concerned, hey, Jack Del Rio, David Garrard, okay, Blaine Gabbert, doing really well, isn't he, for you? Here's the bottom line. This team doesn't have a quarterback. There are a lot of good young quarterbacks that have come along in the last year or two in the NFL, but Blaine Gabbert so far isn't, and this team is passing for less than 50% since he's taken over the reps at the quarterback position. I think what you're going to see here is a very strong Houston defensive game plan against Jacksonville that shuts down the Jaguars, and then on the other side of the football, despite the injuries suffered by Houston, this is the style of defense they can go up against and not have to do too much. And of course, it looks like Andre Johnson may return this weekend, still to me, pound for pound, the best receiver, along with Anquan Boldin in the NFL.
And the thing we've liked so much about Houston this year is they've played good football. We're not talking about talent. We're talking about execution. When they've been out there as a road favorite, a team that was formerly considered to be soft, look at the way they've taken care of business. 23-13 at Miami, 41-7 at Tennessee, 37-9 at Tampa Bay. When they were the superior team on the road against someone they could control, they've controlled them. Particularly look at those defensive numbers. Because if you're going to talk about the assistant coach of the year in the NFL, how about Wade Phillips? Think about this. He loses Mario Williams early in the year. Could be a big problem for a team that built so much of their pass rush around him. No, six different Texans have at least two sacks already. You can't tell, if you go back and look at their charts, when Williams got hurt. There's almost been no drop-off in performance at all. So when we add all these elements together, and of course this is the bonus you get, when you bring donuts in, your chance, Scott, to take home a play of the day.
Oh, boy, let's see. What could it be? You think Alabama's got a chance this week with their top-ranked defense in just about every important statistical category against the 93rd-ranked offense that can only do one thing halfway well? I don't know about that. I'm going to have to go in college and grab Alabama and lay the points as my top play this week in college football. That's my money time. See, you can't hope to replace Teddy Savransky. You can only hope to mock him.
And we got one other two. You know, we've seen that graphic once before. And in the NFL, it's going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're going to lay those points, even though that line has gone up a little bit. Big reason for that, not Jacksonville, Houston, Texas. Injuries to the Jacksonville defense. They've got five starters out from the defense they had on the field 2 weeks ago. One we got just before going on the air, Derek Cox, not only out this week, he's out for the season. Let's look for Houston with that fundamentally sound attack to control Jacksonville. Stretch this game out into double figures. All right, when we come back Monday, Teddy gets to do all the stuff I don't want to do. That's enough of that. Scott, it's been great having you here. We will certainly have you in many more times.
Oh, sure.
Guys, we wish you the best of luck this week. You can go watch LSU Arkansas now. Join us back here Monday for Vegas Sports Day.